Testing in the House Chamber, Legislative Day 72.
The House will come to order. Members will take their seats. Visitors will retire from the chamber. The Sergeant-at-Arms will close the doors. Members and guests are asked to please silence all electronic devices. This afternoon's prayer will be offered by Representative Dixon. Members and visitors, we're asked to please stand for the prayer and to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. Representative Dixon.
Our kind Heavenly Father, we pause for a moment at the beginning of this session and each, in our own way, thank Thee for our opportunity to serve the people of North Carolina, and we seek Thy guidance as we do so. We thank Thee for this beautiful facility wherein we assemble to conduct the people's business. We thank Thee for those who carefully care for these facilities and grounds, and for those who faithfully work here. We are thankful and consider ourselves to be the beneficiaries of great efforts which have preceded us. We are thankful to know that we all were created equal and endowed by Thee with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We acknowledge that all political power is vested in and derived from the people and is instituted for the good of the whole. Help us to understand that as we consider the people's business, that we are first accountable to Thee and then to the people. Bless us today that we may conduct the business of this session in a manner pleasing unto Thee and beneficial to generations yet to come. I pray for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for June 4th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Lewis moves the journal for June 4th be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. Members, our nurse of the day with us today is Anne Marie Adeletta from here in Raleigh. Thanks for being with us today, ma'am. Representative Davis and Stevens recognized, set forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representative Davis and Stevens, Judiciary Committee report. Senate Bill 151, break or enter pharmacy, increase penalty, favor and refer to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Bill is re-referred to Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Bill 148, public records, release of LEO recordings, favorable House Committee substitute, unfavorable Senate Committee substitute, and re-referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Committee substitute is placed on the unfavorable calendar. However, the House Committee substitute is re-referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House. Representatives Elmore, Horn, and Johnson recognize, sent forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representatives Elmore, Horn and Johnson, Education K-12 Committee Report, Senate Bill 448, amend appointment for compact education military, favorable and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Bill is referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Bill 219, modify teacher licensing requirements, favorable House Committee substitute, unfavorable Senate Committee substitute, and referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Committee substitute is placed on the unfavorable calendar. House Committee substitute referred to the Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Bill 500, modify advanced math enrollment, Favorable, House Committee Substitute. Unfavorable, Senate Committee Substitute. And refer to Rules Calendar Operations of the House.
Senate Committee Substitutes placed on the unfavorable calendar. The House Committee Substitute number one, refer to Committee on Rules Calendar and Operations of the House. Representatives Grange and Hall recognize. Send forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representatives Grange and Hall, Elections and Ethics Law Committee Report. Senate Bill 138, Even Year Municipal Elections, Town of Black Mountain. Favorable and refer to Rules Calendar and Operations of the House.
Bill is referred to Rules.
Senate Bill 139, Even Year Municipal Elections, Town of Montreat. Favorable and referred to Rules Calendar and Operations of the House.
Bill is referred to Rules. Representatives Howard, Setzer, Soka, Conrad, Ross, and Warren recognize. Send forth committee report. Clerk will read.
Representatives Howard, Setzer, Zoka, Conrad, Ross, and Warren. Finance Committee Report. Senate Bill 11, ABC Regulation and Reform. Favorable and referred to Rules Calendar and Operations of the House.
Bill is referred to the Committee on Rules Calendar and Operations of the House. Representatives Howard, Setzer, Soka, Conrad, Ross, Warren recognize. Send forth additional committee report. Clerk will read.
Representatives Howard, Setzer, Zoka, Conrad, Ross, and Warren. Finance Committee Report. House Bill 553, Licensing Certain Fire Safety Equipment at Work. Favorable Committee Substitute number 2. Unfavorable Committee Substitute number 1 and re-referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Committee Substitute number 1 is placed on the unfavorable calendar. Committee Substitute number 2, re-referred to Committee on Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
House Bill 228, Modernized Laws Pertaining to the NC Medical Board. Favorable Committee Substitute number 3. Unfavorable Committee Substitute number 2 and re-referred to Rules, Calendar, and Operations of the House.
Senate Committee Substitute number 2 is placed on the unfavorable calendar. Committee Substitute number 3 is referred to Committee on Rules, Calendar, Operations of the House. Members, a couple of special recognitions. First of all, on motion of all members, Chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to delegation of ladies here from the Concerned Women of America. Would y'all please stand so we could welcome you? Thanks for being here. On motion of the gentleman from Wayne County, Representative Bell, Chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to Mackenzie Henson and Paige Henson. Would y'all please stand so we could welcome you back in the back there. Thanks for being with us today. Senate Bill 359, the clerk will read.
Senators Crawley, Heiss, and Harrington, Senate Bill 359, a bill to be entitled an act establishing the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, General Assembly of North Carolina enacts.
Lady from Carteret, Representative McElrath, is recognized for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let me find my motion. Sorry. I wasn't ready for you. Mr. Speaker, I move that the House pass Senate Bill 359, Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, notwithstanding the objections of the governor.
The lady from Carteret, Representative McElrath, has moved that the House do override the veto of Senate Bill 359. The lady has the floor to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of the House, friends, Senate Bill 359, the governor says, is not necessary. And I say it is necessary. It's absolutely necessary, as the babies that are born from abortion are not protected in our statutes. Senator McKissick asked in the Senate committee, if there are protections for these babies in our statutes, the staff informed him, there are protections for babies in utero. There are protections for one-month-old babies. The staff says there are no protections for the babies that are born alive, breathing, heart beating, that are the victims of a failed abortion. North Carolina, the governor says that it doesn't happen here. And we know it does. We've had witnesses that say it has happened in North Carolina. And of course, I'm one of those. We don't know for sure how many times it happens because we don't have any reporting mechanism or requirements here in North Carolina. But the CDC says in the United States there are over 200 of failed abortions, babies born alive. Over 200 just in the few states that report. And there's not many states that report. Maybe about 13 states are reporting. And it's estimated by CDC that there's over 400 babies born alive. But the governor says it's not necessary. On May the 25th, we no longer have a ban of 20 weeks on abortions here in North Carolina, as Judge Osteen struck that out of our statutes. We can have more of these late-term abortions now because we don't have that ban. Now, you'll hear from the minority side, I'm sure, that that ban is still there in a way because of viability. And who determines that viability? The doctor who is there to kill the baby. That's who determines the viability. So do we have a ban? Of course we don't have a ban now because of this ruling, this court ruling. So what we need to do in this bill is protect those who will probably be more now because of the late-term abortions we'll have in this state. There'll probably be more victims, more little babies breathing, heart beating, that could be put on a table or in closets like we've heard in other states have happened to die, or to be put in an incubator with no heat or no blanket. What kind of care is that? All Senate Bill 359 is doing is asking that we protect those babies and give them the same standard of care that babies of the same gestational age that are born naturally get. Why should those babies not have the same rights as a baby born naturally? This is not about abortion, has nothing to do with the abortion procedure or getting between a doctor and a woman. This is about a baby and that baby's rights. Baby boys, baby girls, our future women. God help us if we don't override this veto.
The gentleman from Cleveland, Speaker Moore, is recognized to debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been in the House since 2003, and if I've ever debated a bill on abortion rights, I don't recall that I have. I haven't filed one. It's an issue that has polarized our country. It is an issue in many ways where reasonable minds can disagree about life and about these issues. And it's one which goes to our deepest beliefs and our core values. Well, today I'm not debating an abortion bill either. This is a bill that deals with what happens when a child is born. Whether there was an intent that this child be aborted or not, this child was aborted. This child was born. You know, we debate these issues in the public sphere and in the political discourse all the time. But every now and then, you see the real faces. You see the real human stories. I've heard some say this doesn't happen. There aren't any failed abortions. There aren't these issues. I had the privilege to hear from and then today to meet in person two ladies who will later be introduced when I'm back in the chair. But I want to tell you their story, because I think their story is worth hearing. The first is Gianna Jensen. Gianna has testified before Congress. She has told her story. Gianna was intended to die before she was born. Her medical records indicate that her 17-year-old mother sought a late-term abortion in the 30th week of her pregnancy. It was during a failed saline abortion that she was born alive, weighing just 2.5 pounds. After surprising the doctor, she spent a few months in a NICU unit before being placed in foster care, and then she was eventually adopted by a family when she was 4 years old. Because of the failed abortion attempt, she was born with cerebral palsy. She had to learn a lot of ways how to walk, how to take care of herself, how to get around, how to live as a result of this. But it's been amazing, because I heard her say not too long ago in this very building that she sees that as a testament to her life. And that struggle has made her a powerful voice. Claire Colwell, who also spoke earlier today, her mother was 13 years old when she learned that she was pregnant. She went and had and obtained an abortion. But Claire was a twin. The abortion removed her twin, but did not remove Claire. A few weeks after having the abortion, they didn't realize that she was a twin, that she was there. The mother still felt kicking, realized there was a baby there. And because of how far she had developed, they ended up not having an abortion. But Claire has had all sorts of health issues. She ended up having, she had dislocated hips. She had club feet. She had to wear casts in her feet, a harness, and eventually a body cast to fully physically heal from the injuries she suffered in the womb. I can tell you that she later in life met her birth mother, and that she's forgiven her as well as the other lady I mentioned. These are amazing personal stories. These are amazing women to meet on their own right. Not just because of what they went through, but because who they are as people and how they took tough circumstances and they're just amazing people. I mentioned I've been here since 2003. I can, and every one of you have similar stories I'm about to tell. You can think of incidents where we've argued bills, it really didn't matter. We argue a lot of bills. We've argued about whether to turn left on red. We've talked about a lot of bills over the years. And I've seen people get worked up and then 2 days later wonder why they got worked up about it. Then you can think of those bills or those issues that you dealt with when you said, you know, I'm taking time away from my family. I'm taking time away from my business. I'm taking time away from my community. And this is why I'm here. These are the issues that matter. And very rarely do we deal with issues of life or death. Friends, this is that kind of issue today. This is one of those issues. I can think of no other issue that we've dealt with since I've been in the General Assembly since 2003 as important as this bill today. Now, I know that many, many on the other side of the aisle are being pressured to vote a certain way. Many are being told this is about abortion rights, access. It is not that. It is not that. You can be the most strident pro-choice supporter and vote for this bill and vote for this override. Because this is about what happens when a baby is born. What kind of civilized society cannot stand up and say, you have to take care of a defenseless baby when it's born, whether it was wanted or not. That is what this bill says today. This bill is a matter of life or death. This bill, if we sign it in, if it goes into law, will save lives. And if you don't believe me, just look into the eyes of some of those who did live. My friends, I encourage your support of this motion to override the veto.
What purpose does the gentleman from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, arise?
To debate the bill?
The gentleman has the floor and may debate the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, today we're going to vote on the opportunity to override Governor Cooper's veto of the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. Note the title of the bill, Born Alive. Governor Cooper told us in his veto letter, and I quote, "We need to move on from these divisive social and political issues and talk about the real issues facing the people of North Carolina. Governor Cooper, I could not disagree with you anymore. The life of our constituents is the primary reason we are here. We must protect them as their elected representatives. I'd like to point out the following, which we heard in the prayer earlier today, from the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's the United States Constitution. North Carolina Constitution similarly says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all persons are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the enjoyment of the fruits of their own labors and the pursuit of happiness. Do you notice a trend here? Both the United States and North Carolina constitutions tell us, we the elected, are here to protect life. That's what it's about. Our founding documents give us that very basic instruction. Today, we're not talking about somebody who is in the womb. We are not talking about abortion. We are talking about a baby, a person who, even after the best efforts of a doctor to kill them, survives and is born alive. Listen to that again. Born alive. This baby has been birthed. It is no longer attached to the mother in any way, shape, or form. And while I am not a doctor, I freely admit that, is no longer any possible threat, nor does it have anything physically to do with that mother any longer. It is born. Thereby, according to our laws, should be afforded all the protections of both the United States and the North Carolina Constitution. I'd also like to quote from Rhonda Beaupre of Abilene, Kansas, who wrote me an email today. Rhonda points out very saliently, since a woman has already rejected the baby by attempting to abort it, the woman can no longer claim that this is a, quote, right to choose, unquote, issue. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not a social issue. This is not a political issue, nor is it a religious issue. This is an issue of whether the great state of North Carolina will sanction the murder of a baby. Do you want to wear that banner today? I ask everybody on both sides of the aisle, is that really something you're going to be able to sleep with? Go home and tell your children, your wives, your grandchildren, that you voted to allow babies to be killed after they were born. Think of the horror that's going to bring to them. Are we going to kill a child on its birthday? Born alive. That's what it means. People, I ask you today, respect the people you represent from your respective districts. Vote today to protect the rights of all of those that are born and alive. That is the spirit and the meaning of our founding fathers, those who wrote our United States Constitution and the Constitution of the great state of North Carolina. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Our guests in the gallery, we do not allow interruptions of session either through applause, booing, or any kind of thing. So I would ask anyone here or the public to please remain silent during the debate of the bill. For what purpose does the gentleman from Craven, Representative Speciale, rise?
To speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
I sent my words out to many of you. I don't know if you read it or not, but I'm going to go ahead and say them here this morning, this afternoon. Today is not just another day. There's a bill that you and I have to vote on, this bill. The consequences are much more far-reaching than whether this bill passes or fails in and of itself. All of the manipulations of subject matter, the twisting and the turning of the issues, the arguments trying to turn this into an abortion issue cannot quiet your consciences or soothe your souls. The override of the governor's veto on the Born Alive bill is significant because, in addition to saving lives, it will tell the nation where North Carolina stands on life. Not where we stand on abortion, because you and I know that this is not about abortion. This is not about women's health. Though I expect it to be twisted and contorted by those trying to justify their vote to support death. This vote is a vote for life. It's a vote to protect children that are born. They are not in the womb. They are born. They are alive, and they're lying on a cold stainless steel table. And whether they're left to die there is going to be up to you. Please don't justify your votes, your no votes, by saying that North Carolina doesn't do that, because you don't know what goes on behind the walls of the abortion clinics, and there's enough evidence to prove that it does happen. There are those who have testified. This bill will ensure that if a child is born alive, they are given medical attention the same as any other patient in any other hospital. It's that simple. And any arguments to the contrary are hyperbole and untruthful. Those of you who have been here a bit know that I vote my conscience on each and every bill. The merits of the bill decide my vote, not the party, not the sponsors. I've had folks in my party upset with me for some of my votes. I've been accused of voting with the other side. You know what? I don't concern myself with that. I'm asking you to do the same, particularly on this issue. This cannot be a partisan issue. This is a human issue. I know that everyone on the other side of the aisle cannot possibly be against ensuring that babies born alive are given proper medical treatment. I know many of you, and I know some of your hearts. Please do not let party expectations come into play here. Because long after you leave the General Assembly, you will have to carry the burden of your vote. I ask you to vote as an individual, not as a party member, not as a caucus member. Once a baby is born, he or she is a North Carolinian. And you and I have an obligation to protect their life and their liberty. God is watching us. It's that important.
What purpose does the gentleman from Cabarrus, Representative Pittman, rise to speak on the motion? The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, we're at a crossroads where we're going to be deciding today if we're going to go back to the ancient evils of ancient civilizations, or we're going to move forward with the enlightenment that we claim to be ours today. Kind of like when Elijah stood on Mount Carmel and he told the people of Israel, how long will you go on halting on two opinions? If Yahweh be God, serve him. If Baal be God, then serve him. And Baal, of course, is a false god of the Canaanites that Ahab and Jezebel were leading the people of Israel to follow, who required child sacrifice. There's a long history of infanticide. The ancient Romans, who considered themselves to be the epitome of civilization, still allowed it to be customary and legal for a father to have complete power of life and death over his children, as well as his wife, by the way. the complete power of life and death over his children. They would expose them, leave them in the sewer, leave them out on the garbage dump, take them outside of town, leave them out in the wilderness, where they might die of exposure to the heat or the cold. They might be eaten by wild animals. Oftentimes pagan priests would go and get them and use them for child sacrifice or else raise them as cult prostitutes. Then the church came along. Christianity, which reaffirmed the old understanding of Judaism that every child is created in the image of God and therefore precious and worthy of our protection. And they would rescue these children and care for them and raise them as their own, or if they didn't survive, they'd give them decent burial. But they tried to take care of them as best we could. That is our heritage as Christians. Are we going to deny that today and say, oh, we'll go back to the old ancient ways of murdering our own children? I mean, children are born under various circumstances. I don't care what the circumstances are. Once a child is born, it has entered human society. Mahatma Gandhi a long time ago said that the true measure of any society can be found in how it treats its most vulnerable members. And there's none more vulnerable than a newborn baby. Jesus says, "See that you do not despise one of these little ones. For I tell you that in heaven their angels always behold the face of my Father who is in heaven. What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountain and go in search of the one that went astray? And if he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 that never went astray. So it is not the will of my Father in heaven that one of these little ones should perish." Jesus also said, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me." Christians should seek to do what Jesus would do, and if you think that he would approve of killing a child that's born, alive, breathing, struggling to live, and needing help, then you believe in a Jesus I've never known. My Jesus would not support that or approve of it. It's no different than what a college professor of mine did. He was a Free Will Baptist preacher. Sometime after I'd finished college, I guess I was in seminary at the time, he was accused of murdering a lady in his church. And I couldn't believe it until he confessed. And what had happened was he had borrowed about $20,000. He'd had an affair with her and she wasn't paying her quick enough. He went to ask for more time. And she said, "No, you pay me now or I'm going to expose our affair." He got angry. He started to leave. Well, he was kind of a little fellow and he was sensitive about his short stature. She says, "Come back here, you little shrimp." And he's lost it. He picked up a chair and hit her over the head. And she's lying on the floor unconscious, probably having convulsions, and he panicked. He'd already messed up, but what he should have done at that point, when she's needing help, is to call for help. He would have faced some bad circumstances for what he'd done, but at least he could have tried to save her life. But he panicked, found a knife, and cut her throat. When a child is born and we choose not to help it live, we choose to kill it, it is absolutely no different than what my professor did in that case. No different at all, just a difference in age. In addition to this, Clarence Henderson and Clarence Thomas, I know some of you will say, "Well, they're just Republicans." But do you know who Clarence Thomas is? You remember him? Clarence Henderson. You remember who he is? A hero of mine. One of the men who in 1960 sat in at the diner at Woolworths in Greensboro. He and Clarence Thomas both say that killing these infants is a return to eugenics. And they're absolutely right. You see, those Roman fathers, if wife had a little girl, he didn't want a little girl. Or he thought he had too many kids. Didn't need, or maybe it was deformed or something. Just kill it. Absolutely heartless. We're at a crossroads. What kind of society are we going to be? One that cares for the most vulnerable in our society, these little ones who need our help, whom God says deserve our help? Are we going to be ones who kill our own children? I tell you this, I know some of you may be afraid if you vote for this override, you may not get reelected, but I'll tell you something. It's the right thing to do. And I hope you'll join me in the understanding that if I lose an election because I did the right thing, so be it. Please vote for this override. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Pitt, Representative Murphy, rise?
Speak to the motion.
Gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, when we spoke on this the first time, I mentioned to everyone that I probably was the only person in here to actually deliver a baby. And while I haven't delivered a baby here in the United States probably since my days of residency, I have, in the last 25 years, delivered them overseas. And these come through oftentimes. I can remember several of them that I delivered in Kenya when the child was only about 15 weeks. We knew that child was not going to live, but the child had a heartbeat. Child took gasps and breath and tried to breathe. And we would give that baby to the mother, wrap it in a nice cloth and a warm cloth, and hand that to the mother. And the child usually didn't live but an hour or so. Well, the same thing happens today. I actually took the liberty of calling the chairman of obstetrics at my university today and speaking with him and asking him a few questions, because as I said, I've not delivered babies in the United States in quite a while. In the state of North Carolina today, if a baby is born through a miscarriage, through a spontaneous miscarriage, that has a heartbeat, regardless of its age, be it 16 weeks, 18 weeks, 22 weeks, 26 weeks, that child is given a birth certificate. And at 15 weeks, 18 weeks, 20 weeks, that child probably will not survive without being resuscitated, without taking into the NICU. It's definitely below 21 weeks or so. So the child is given a birth certificate, and then if the child lives an hour because their lungs are just not developed, the child is then given a death certificate. So tell me now, in the state of North Carolina, where now there is no age limit, there is no term to when an abortion can be done, what is the difference between a child who comes out of the womb at 26 weeks before they should and one that is aborted at 26 weeks because someone wanted that to be done? They both have a heartbeat. They are both breathing. One will have a birth certificate, and the other one, for some reason, because of the intention of its delivery, would not. So again, I plead with you, this is not about the discussion of a woman's right to an abortion. This is merely the discussion of when a child is born alive with a heartbeat, attempting to breathe, that would get a birth certificate. Why we would not render the appropriate aid. The appropriate aid at 15 weeks, 16 weeks, we know, is wrapping that child in a warm cloth and handing it to its mother, because we know the lungs are not going to be viable to allow that child to live. Yet at 20 weeks, things get a little bit more blurred. In 22 weeks, we get a little bit more blurred. We look at APGAR scores and their viability. Why? And I ask you to seek this with your heart. Why would you vote against, when a child is born with a heartbeat, even though the intention was for that child not to be there, why would you vote against my colleagues being forced to render aid to that child, even if it's just palliation? I mean, please don't make this the issue that it's not. It is not about abortion rights. It's about right for existence. I plead with your hearts. Please don't throw the politics, throw the R's, throw the D's out the window. Please remember, we are all part of humankind, and we are called to be kind and loving. That is all we're asking. That is literally all we are asking. So please, throw the political persuasions, throw the political arguments away. We talk about doing this for the children. Now we talk about doing this for our infants and for life. So I please ask that you override this veto. Thank you very much.
What purpose does the lady from New Hanover, Representative Grange, rise?
To debate the motion.
The lady has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to emphasize something that my colleague from Carteret County touched on in her remarks. It has been said that if this bill becomes law, that it will impact women's health. What I would like to say today is that impact on women's health is the impact it would have on a future woman who is born a baby girl. And for that reason, ladies and gentlemen, I ask you to vote green on this bill.
What purpose does the gentleman from Columbus, Representative Jones, rise?
To debate the motion.
The gentleman is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As most of you know, I've had a pretty emotional week with the loss of my mother 1 week from today. And there's been a lot of reflection about being her son and being a son and being a daddy. I was not going to debate this. I felt that hearts were probably where they were. But a lot of pressure inside me wants to ask the gentleman of this chamber a question to the guys. Your whole life, you have been reared to protect women and children. I just want you to ask yourself one question. Why is this any different? You have spent your lives, I know you, I socialize with you, I consider many of you friends, and I know the kind of persons you are. You are protectors. Before you mash that button, ask yourself, why is this any different?
For our purpose, does the lady from New Hanover, Representative Butler, rise?
Speak on the motion, Mr. Speaker.
Ladies, recognize debate bill.
Colleagues, I recognize just how contentious this issue has become. You only need look around. It's clear. But I hope you can hear me when I say that I have never met a person in my life who is pro-abortion. Never. Not one. That term is terribly misleading and hurtful, and I can't really believe that people of good conscience still use it, but they do. That term is much like this bill, incendiary, and seemingly designed to upset and confuse. It seems that it is more important somehow to intentionally inflame people and to gin up voter outrage, to take a page out of some national playbook to undermine women's access to health care, than it is to really take time to evaluate what the actual effects of this bill will have on our North Carolina families. Whether you are willing to hear me today or not, I promise you that anyone I have ever spoken to on this issue wants abortions to be safe, legal, available, and rare. We've been down this path recently, albeit in another context. HB2 should stand as a stark reminder of what can happen when we legislate to elicit a knee-jerk reaction out of folks, just to get everybody good and riled up, without thoughtful consideration of the needless hurt and pain people are going to suffer as a confidence. I sometimes think we haven't learned a thing here. Members, right now, today, by practice and according to the law of North Carolina, as well as federal law, all living infants in North Carolina are legally entitled to the care that they need. Any overt act to injure or cause death to a living infant is already punishable as murder. I thank goodness and I am grateful that there are people who have enough guts and enough compassion in this world to be physicians trained to handle these high-risk pregnancies. If we pass this bill, I have to believe that there will be far fewer of them. To be a doctor that knows that he or she is going to have to guide and care for women and men, potential mothers and fathers, big brothers and sisters, during those times as their hopes and dreams are being shattered? Well, those high-risk pregnancy physicians are among the people who are going to be damaged by this bill. And according to Novant Health, 60% of those doctors, 60% are women themselves. And that figure is expected to rise to 80% within 10 years. Why would we put forward a bill giving the public the impression that these high-risk pregnancy doctors are somehow villainous? So villainous, in fact, that we need a new law, separate from the ones we already have, a law that has the potential to punish them with a Class D felony, a $250,000 fine, subject them to prison time, civil damages, punitive damages, treble damages, and attorney's fees for good measure. To do that to these caregivers is unconscionable. There is absolutely no need in this world for politicians to criminalize complex medical decisions that are best made by patients and the valiant physicians that care for them. Furthermore, there are rigorous licensing standards, established medical duties of care, and a North Carolina Medical Board that governs it all. Late-term procedures, such as the one contemplated by this bill, are rare and performed only because there is an immediate threat to the health of the mother or because the infant suffers an abnormality so severe, as Dr. Murphy has pointed out, that the infant is incapable of living for more than a very short time, sometimes only minutes, perhaps hours. Those minutes and those hours are what we are talking about. And whatever time there is should be spent with family, in comfort, in peace, and not in a neonatal intensive care unit with lights and needles and tubes. This bill has the potential to deprive North Carolina families of those precious moments. Dr. Eve Karkowski, a high-risk pregnancy doctor and professor of obstetrics at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, writes, and I paraphrase, she says, "When I walk into the room of a woman in crisis, one of a woman whose water has broken before viability, I introduce myself as the high-risk pregnancy doctor, and I tell her, you are the most important person in this room, because women forget. They are so focused on their baby. They will risk their own lives to try and achieve viability for that child." The doctor says, I tell her, yes, this is a tragedy, but unfortunately, it can get worse. And then the doctor says that when medically necessary and in accordance with her clinical judgment and professional guidelines, she offers her patient an abortion. The doctor says, I offer this option with the gravity due a desired and beloved pregnancy. It is a terrible discussion to have, full of grief, mourning, fear. It is what she calls the consummate no-win situation. The doctor continues to describe the dilemma of caring for patients as she runs up against laws made by lawmakers who don't seem to have an understanding of what a complex pregnancy is or even a curiosity about just how wrong even a desired pregnancy can go. It seems to her and to me that lawmakers don't remember the suffering and the trauma of those women who are at risk of dying themselves. She adds that all of these laws, laws like this one that criminalize physicians as they navigate an already difficult path, will have the effect of making the doctors forget who is owed their primary duty of care. And that will come with dangerous consequences because, as the doctor says, I can take the best care of her or I can protect myself, and I cannot do both. Colleagues, this bill is not necessary. It will create division between caregiver and patient. That moment of hesitation, of uncertainty. Do we want patients wondering if their care is being compromised because their physician has somehow gotten all twisted up in a law and their own liability is clouding their judgment? In a crisis, when the toughest of life and death decisions are being made, I want that caregiver to have one thing on her mind: caring for her patient in the most professional, compassionate, and appropriate manner possible, according to her training, her judgment, and the ethical standards of care. I want that patient and the doctor to row that boat together and somehow navigate what is indeed a tragedy. The one thing that I don't want, and that you should not want either, is for that doctor to worry more about her own legal jeopardy than she does for the care of her patient. For that would be yet another tragedy. I urge you to vote no on this override.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Bumgarner, rise?
To debate the motion.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, we go along here for long periods of time, and we debate all kinds of issues. Some are important, some not so important. They're important to the people running them, and we're happy sometimes, and we're frustrated and angry or disappointed, but we get past all of that. But every now and then, an issue comes along that's vitally important, that's a matter of life and death, and literally, lives are hanging in the balance. And I would just remind you that this is one of those issues. And these come along rarely. And today is that day. And so I would just like to say, be careful what you do. Think hard. Make a good decision. Because whatever you do, you're going to have to live with the consequences.
Members, on motion of Representative McElrath from the chair, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the hour to two special guests. If you indulge the chair a moment, first is Gianna Jensen. Ms. Jensen is a lady I debated about earlier, who was born despite an attempted abortion in the 30th week of her pregnancy. It was during a failed saline abortion that she was born alive, weighing just 2.5 pounds. After surprising the physician, she spent her first few months in a NICU, and then eventually was placed in foster care and in adoption, and then adopted at the age of 4. She was born with cerebral palsy, but with overcoming these obstacles through her faith and through her work, she has been an amazing speaker who's gone around the country speaking on these issues. She also was privileged to watch as President George W. Bush signed the Federal Born Alive Infants Protection Act in 2002, and she is here in North Carolina today as an abortion survivor to witness today's vote. Ms. Jensen, if you'd please stand, we're honored to have you with us today. We also have one other additional guest on motion of Representative McElrath from the chair who is with us today. That's Claire Colwell. Claire was born when her mother was only 13 years old. As mentioned earlier, she had a sibling who was a twin. The abortion was successful in aborting the twin. However, she was not successful with relatively to Claire. And so later on, they discovered that she was there. She was still in the womb. She was born alive, but as a result, and in part to the attempted abortion, she suffered from dislocated hips and club feet. In fact, she had to wear a cast on her feet, a harness, and eventually a body cast to fully physically heal from her injuries in the womb. She was adopted later in life, met her birth mother, and I guess has a relationship now, but she still suffers from the effects today of an attempted abortion, but she's a role model for so many, and she too is with us today. So, Claire, I want to welcome you as well with us today. Thank you. For what purpose, the lady from Carteret, Representative McElrath, rise?
To speak on the motion.
Lady has floor to debate the bill.
Second time. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I'm not going to stand here and talk long. I just want to remind you this is not about abortions or getting involved in the care between a woman and her doctor. This is about Gianna and about Claire. And those babies who are not here today to testify like they did. Because they were stuck in a closet to finish their last gasp of breath. Or on a cold, still table in a stainless steel bucket or pan. These are stories that are real. Nurses in South Carolina have sent me all this information as to why they almost dropped out of nursing. These stories are real. These are human beings. If doctors don't do anything wrong, they cannot have any consequences from this bill. Let's think about Gianna and Claire and those babies without a voice. They're not put in the incubator with the heat turned on, but possibly put in the incubator just to left to die. Vote your conscience, but no, this is not about abortion. This is about a living, breathing, heart-beating human baby. May God put it up on your heart to do what's right.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Pitt, Representative Murphy, rise.
Debate bill a second time.
Gentleman's recognized.
I wasn't planning on doing this, but and I did not interrupt Representative Butler out of matter of respect, but let me speak to a couple issues that she brought up. I went to training. I did 5 years of surgical training. I worked with a lot of obstetrics. I would go into delivery rooms, et cetera. This isn't an issue about access to care. It isn't an issue about whether somebody's going to want to be an obstetrician or not. That has nothing to do with this. It has nothing to do with this whatsoever. I took an oath to protect life and save life. I've stopped in accidents 3 times and pulled people out of cars. It's because of what I'm called to do, and probably many of you probably have done similar things. This issue isn't about abortion. This issue is not about pregnancy. It is about life. It is simply about life. And if a child is born, regardless of its 15 weeks to 25 weeks to 35 weeks, there are different parameters, there are different outcomes for that child. And no, there may be a law that says we cannot do anything intentionally to cause the demise of that infant. But neglect is an intentional act. Not rendering aid is an intentional act. I could drive by someone who's had an accident. I couldn't. I couldn't do it from the kind of person I am and the oath that I took. But not rendering aid is an intentional act. And I know my obstetrician colleagues. I know them. And if there is a chance that a child is to be born and able to live, then they want that. They do it all the time. They deliver children. They bring life into the world. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to pull this back to ground zero. There's no threats in here that what you have to do, you have to deal with on the final day of judgment. I'm asking you to make this judgment today. This is the final day of judgment for the state of North Carolina. We have a child who was born alive, sitting, breathing, with a heartbeat. To not render aid is an intentional act. So I plead and I beg with you, this doesn't, again, have to do with D, it doesn't have to do with R, it has to do with L. It has to do with life. So I would ask you, please, look in your heart and choose life. choose the point where me and my colleagues are to renew our vows and choose life and render aid. Please vote to override this veto.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the motion that Senate Bill 359 become law, notwithstanding the objections of the governor. All those in favor will vote aye. All opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 67, having voted in the affirmative, 53 in the negative. The requisite 3/5 vote is not achieved. The veto is not overridden. House Bill 402, the clerk will read.
Representatives Grange, Zoka, and Fraley, House Bill 402, a bill to be entitled an act authorized to acquisition or construction and the financing without appropriations from the general fund of certain capital improvement projects of constituent institutions of the University of North Carolina, General Assembly of North Carolina Annexed.
Members, we'll stand at ease just a moment. I know a lot of folks in the gallery are leaving, so we'll stand at ease. So members, we'll stand at ease for about 5 minutes.
House will come back to order. We're back on House Bill 402. The clerk has read the bill, and Representative Grange is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this bill provides for three capital projects for the UNC system. It will authorize the financing and construction of these capital improvements by the constituent institutions of the university. The projects will be financed through revenue bonds, special obligation bonds, and other funds available to the institutions, excluding tuition and appropriations from the general fund. There are three projects that are included in the bill. One is for the University of North Carolina at Wilmington for a dining facility. One is for Western Carolina University for lower campus residence halls, and one is for the University of North Carolina School of the Arts for a new residence hall. This is a standard bill that is run every session. It does not cost the state anything, and I encourage your support. It passed through all committees unanimously. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, the question before the House, passage of House Bill 402 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Following members on the floor, Davis, Johnson, Hawkins, Montgomery. Clerk Lock Machine record the vote. 112 having voted in the affirmative, 3 in the negative. House Bill 402 passes second reading, remains on the calendar. House Bill 235, clerk will read.
Representatives Arp and Zoka, House Bill 235, a bill to be entitled an act to make technical, clarifying, conforming administrative changes to the laws related to the public utilities to increase the non-utility filing fee on the certificate public convenience necessary and allow the use of master meters of multi-unit apartment buildings and to authorize a study of granting the Utilities Commission to public staff administrative flexibility regarding the classification and salaries. General Assembly of North Carolina.
Gentleman from Union, Representative Arp, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, this is an agency bill, a technical bill for the Utilities Commission and public staffs. It makes various changes. It's passed through every committee unanimously. I can go over each section, or I could just ask for your vote for green.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House. Passage of House Bill 235 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed to vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Representative Brody, wish to record on the vote. Clerk Lock Machine record the vote. 116 having voted in the affirmative, 1 the negative. House Bill 235 passed second reading. Will without objection be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina annexed.
President Montgomery, gentleman will be recorded. For purpose, gentleman rise.
Be recorded as an aye on
the gentleman be recorded as having voted aye. Question for the House, passage of House Bill 235 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 235 have passed third reading, will be sent to the Senate. Representative Hawkins, gentleman wish to be recorded aye. Gentlemen, be recorded as having voted aye. You get that, Mr. Clerk? House Bill 399, the clerk will read.
Representatives Ross, Bill, Warren, and Adams, House Bill 399, a bill to be entitled an act to increase the tax credit of rehabilitation income producing historic structures to allow the tax credit for the rehabilitation of buildings in disaster areas and to delay the sunset of the tax credit for historic rehabilitation. General Assembly of North Carolina and Adams.
Gentleman from Alamance, Representative Ross, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, what this bill does simply is it extends a sunset on the North Carolina Historic Preservation Tax Credit for 4 more years. Has two slight modifications in cases where the expenditures are under $10 million. It raises that cap from $10 million to $15 million. And for projects that are over $10 million, it raises that cap to $15 million. The other modification, there are certain tier bonuses and large project bonuses for mill projects and things like that. We've also added in an additional bonus for any project that takes place in a disaster relief area, those areas affected by the hurricanes, that type thing. I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House, passage of House Bill 399 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk Lot Machine record the vote. 113 have been voted in the affirmative, 5 in the negative. House Bill 399 passed the second reading. Bill without objection. Be read a third time.
Gentleman says no climate acts.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 399 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 399 having passed third reading will be sent to the Senate. Senate Bill 252. Clerk will read.
Senator Jay Davis, Senate Bill 252, a bill to the entitlement act clarifies certain provider and patient rights regarding health benefit plan contracts for provision of dental services. General Assembly of North Carolina acts.
Gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, recognize debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and ladies and gentlemen, the legislation before us is the product of stakeholder meetings over the last several months and represents a compromise between North Carolina dentists as represented by the Dental Society and dental insurers. It's my understanding that all parties have agreed to the language that is contained in this bill. Here is a very quick summary of what this compromise bill does. One, it will prohibit the mandatory method of payment by credit card. Two, it is a limitation of rental insurance networks, and it provides a way and makes clear how claims that are approved in prior authorizations would be paid. I would be glad if the member so desire to explain those points further, but as I said, I believe this is a consensus bill between all of the concerned parties, and I would ask for your support of the bill.
For what purpose, gentleman from Pitt, Representative Murphy, rise.
Ask the bill sponsor a question.
Gentleman from Harnett, yield to the gentleman from Pitt.
Yes, sir.
Yields.
It's a real meaty bill. I just wondered if it had any teeth in it.
Representative Murphy, I appreciate you taking a bite out of the chamber's time to ask that.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 252 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative White, lady wishes to vote on the bill. Representative Torbett, gentleman wishes to vote on the bill. Torbett, aye. Clerk Lot Machine record the vote. 119 having voted in the affirmative, none the negative. Senate Bill 252 passed the second reading. Will without objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina next.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 252 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 252 having passed third reading will be sent to the Senate. Actually, this one's enrolled and sent to the governor. Senate Bill 255. Clerk will read.
Senator Rabin, Senate Bill 255, a bill to the Entitlement Act providing a time period in which the Director of the Office of the State Construction shall issue a final order allowing or denying the contractor's verified written claim. General Assembly, North Carolina acts.
Gentleman from Union, Representative Art, recognize debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill, Senate Bill 255, is the same as House Bill 365. We've also passed this bill last term as well. This is a consensus bill. I know of no opposition. What this bill does is close a loophole where the state director of state construction basically sets time limits to decide a claim. The Court of Appeals ruling had said that short of doing that, their other options are not available to the contractor until the director of state construction. So we work with state construction to have appropriate timelines to make those decisions. And I know of no of opposition. I ask for your vote.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 255 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Representative Brody, going to vote on the bill? Clerk will light machine, record the vote. 119, haven't voted in the affirmative, none in the negative. Senate Bill 255, pass the second reading. Will without objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly, no client annex.
Question for the House. Passage of Senate Bill 255 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 255, having passed third reading, will be returned to the Senate for concurrence. Senate Bill 381, clerk will read.
Senators Wells, Woodard, and Edwards, Senate Bill 381, a bill to maintain an act to reconstitute several Board of Commissioners held to have unconstitutionally appointed membership pursuant to McCrory v. Berger and Cooper v. Berger, and to make clarifications to those boards. General Assembly, no client annex.
Gentleman from Henderson, Representative McGrady, recognize to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a bill to reconstitute certain boards and commissions. These boards and commissions were challenged initially in a case brought by Governor McCrory, and then subsequently in a separate case brought by Governor Cooper. And essentially, the Supreme Court determined that the governor needed to be in control of these boards and commissions. While not defining what that meant, the consensus seems to be that the majority of the appointments to these boards need to be made by a governor. And so the bill that is before you reflects work done by leadership in both the House and the Senate and with the governor's office. To my knowledge, all three leadership in the House and the Senate and the governor are in support of the bill. In the original bill, 381, which is, if you look back, only had to do with two of the boards that were the subject of the litigation. Some of you may remember in the last session I introduced a bill, House Bill 17, that dealt with all of them. And then again in this session, House Bill 14. And so what this bill is really a combination of those two bills. We've taken what the Senate sent over and added the remaining boards and commissions so as to try to address all of the various boards and commissions that were subject to any litigation. I would characterize, in my past, I served on the Clean Water Management Trust Fund Board, and the only changes that really were made that didn't relate specifically to the composition of the board were in the Clean Water Management Trust Fund area. And there was some debate about that in the Rules Committee yesterday, and there will be a motion put forward by Representative Bell to just make sure we got that clarified. We weren't trying to back into some other issue of any sort, but if there's concerns there, hopefully we have dealt with that. We did hear in rules, though, from the executive director of the Clean Water Management Trust Fund as to the changes being made here. They frankly were clarifications. Clean Water Management Trust Fund was set up in like 1999 and has more recently been used on things like military buffers that probably when the bill itself was put forward, no one thought that would be an issue. So I would characterize this as clarifying language. I am aware of no one opposing the bill, and I urge your support for it.
Representative Bell's gentleman wishes to send forth an amendment. The gentleman is recognized to send forth an amendment. Clerk will read.
Representative Bell moves to amend the bill on page 2, line 37 through 40, by rewriting the lines to read.
Chairman's recognized. Debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, if you were in rules yesterday or just heard Representative McGrady's explaining, you understand this is a clarifying amendment. There was a lot of confusion on why this was even in here to begin with, but we talked with all parties and no one's in opposition. Then this amends the bill and deletes those lines. Thank you.
Gentleman from Henderson, Representative McGrady, is recognized to debate the amendment.
Urge your support of the amendment. It is simply clarifying, and I appreciate Representative Bell helping me to work this out. Bye.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the adoption of Amendment A1 sent forward by Representative Bell. Those in favor, vote aye. Those opposed, vote no. Clerk, open the vote. Representative Corbin. Clerk Lock Machine record the vote. 118, having voted in the affirmative, none of the negative. The amendment's adopted. We're now back on the bill. Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 381 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Representative Ensco, would you like to vote on this bill? Representative Rogers. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 119, having voted in the affirmative, none the negative. Senate Bill 381 passes second reading. Will without objection be read a third time?
General Assembly of North Carolina annex.
Question for the House, passage of Senate Bill 381 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Senate Bill 381, having passed third reading, will be returned to the Senate. Bill is also ordered and engrossed. Members, a couple of procedural matters. We've concluded our calendar, but would ask everyone not to leave just yet. First, Chair is going to ask leave for suspension of the rules. House Resolution 1018. This is the resolution honoring the North Carolinians and allied troops who fought on D-Day that we're going to be debating tomorrow. Chair would ask leave that the rules be suspended, that the bill may have its first reading today, so we may take it up to tomorrow. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read.
Rules calling and operations of the House. House Resolution 1018. House Resolution honoring the North Carolinians and the allied troops who fought during World War II and the 75th anniversary of D-Day.
Counted for June 6th. This is an announcement to all members of the House who represent a county that is either called Forsyth County or a county contiguous to Forsyth County. Would ask that immediately upon adjournment, if you could come to my office, I'd appreciate it. Again, that's members in both parties. If you represent Forsyth County or a contiguous county to Forsyth County, need you for about 5 minutes once we adjourn. If you could just immediately step to my office on a matter, would appreciate it. Members, tomorrow we are going to be meeting in the old Capitol to take up the resolution. We will also have the third reading on the one roll call bill, so we'll actually have a true roll call vote tomorrow in there. We're now to the point of notices and announcements. For what purpose does the lady from Davie, Representative Howard, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Ladies recognized for
an
announcement.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I would just like to remind everybody that this afternoon at 5:00 that the Wine Caucus is hosting our annual event, and that's going to be over at the Hawkins Hartness House in the yard. The Department of Agriculture always helps us with this, and it's going to be a very special event. And particularly for the folks from the Asheville area, Biltmore has been chosen as the wine of the year, and we will have a special recognition for those folks. So I hope you will come. It's in the yard. But we do have a tent in case it rains. And that address is 300 North Blunt Street. So if you need to, you can walk. It's real easy. Hope you can come.
Members, on motion of the gentleman from Lenoir, Representative Humphrey, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to Lenoir County Commissioner Matt Doherty and wife Deb. Would y'all please stand so we could welcome you? Are they still with us here? Back in the back. Okay.
What purpose, the lady from Pitt, Representative Smith, rise.
Point of personal privilege.
Ladies recognized, speak to a point of personal privilege.
I would like to take a moment to recognize the incredible work that was done by the ECU Pirates baseball team, who came out victorious this weekend in the NCAA regional tournaments. For those of you who were not on the edge of your seats watching the game all weekend, ECU actually lost the first game in the tournament. It was a rough start, but thanks to sheer willpower and teamwork, they were able to come out victorious, and they won the next four games in a row. Something that only 8% of teams have ever done in the history of this tournament. The Pirates now advance to the Super Regionals, where they will play against Louisville this Friday at noon. So please be sure to tune in. If they can manage a victory in the Super Regional, they will be on their way to the College World Series. So please join me in wishing the very best of luck to our ECU baseball team, and go Pirates! Arr.
Gentleman from Vance, Representative Garrison, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Mr. Speaker, having submitted a representative statement with the clerk, I ask that it be read in its entirety upon adjournment and spread across the journal.
So ordered.
And would like to be recognized to speak to the statement.
Gentleman has the floor.
Mr. Speaker and members, I stand to recognize and honor Dolly B. Burbrill of Warren County, who has been an outstanding advocate for civil rights, voting rights, social justice, and environmental justice, in addition to her work as staff members for three members of Congress. Her volunteer work in these areas have impacted the lives of thousands of people over the years. Most notably, in 1982, Dolly led the community in a protest against the state of North Carolina for dumping PCB in Warren County, which was described by the Washington Post as the greatest civil rights movement since the 1960s. During the protest, Dolly was arrested and jailed five times, with some overnight stays in jail for blocking trucks by lying down in front of them to prevent delivery of PCB-laced soil to be put in a dump site in her community. This was the beginning of the environmental justice movement. Stories of the life and work of Dolly Burbrill have been published in several books, including Crazy for Democracy, Women in Grassroots Movement by Tennis Kaplan, the Politics of Motherhood, Activist Voices from the Left to Right by Alexis Jeter, Inez Orlick, and Diana Taylor, and Women Reshaping Human Rights, How Extraordinary Activists Are Changing the World by Marguerite Guzman Bouvard. Dolly served as chair of the Joint Women Warren County State Landfill Work Group, a task force that worked to secure more than $25 million from the state of North Carolina to detoxify the Warren County PCB landfill, which was successfully completed in 2003. On a personal note, Dolly has been a longtime friend. She was my campaign advisor for election to the NC House in 2016, and here I stand in this chamber even today, thanks to Dolly. I salute and ask you to join me in recognizing Dolly Burbrill. She deserves saluting as an outstanding citizen of the state of North Carolina.
And members, And members, the chair would like to make a proper introduction and welcome for Dolly Burwell of Warren County, Mia Burwell, daughter, and other family members and friends, including Michelle Sanders, Secretary of State, and Reginald Spade of the Office of Congressman G.K. Butterfield. Dolly, of course, has been announced as retiring from congressional work in Washington and in North Carolina after serving on the staff of three members of Congress, those being Eva Clayton, Frank Balance, and G.K. Butterfield. Ms. Burwell, wanted to have you with us today, and congratulations on your retirement. And Ms. Burwell, be careful hanging around here too long. Some of these folks will try to hire you before you get out of the building. So, Gentleman from Illinois, Representative Humphrey, recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Yes, I'd like to remind my colleagues about a legislative reception sponsored by the North Carolina Beverage Association, 5 o'clock today over at Haywood Hall, 2 blocks east of the old Capitol building. Thank you.
What purpose, gentlemen from Cumberland, Representative Floyd, rise.
Inquiry to chair, Mr.
Gentleman's recognized.
Mr. Speaker, and listen to the young lady about the ECU game, and I have a real old car, so I'm trying to get an early start. And I want to make sure I get to the game on time, so it's a pretty good ways off. So I just want to know what the schedule looked like next week so I can return back for the session.
Representative Floyd, I heard you weren't scared of any speed limit signs anyway, so I wouldn't worry about it. Did the Highway Patrol hear that? That's Elmer Floyd from Cumberland County. House tag 36. Any more questions, Representative Floyd? Quiet purpose, gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, rise.
Point of personal privilege.
Gentlemen's recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Members, you may know my seatmate, Brendan Jones, and has had a difficult week over the last week in losing his mother. His birthday was actually last Friday, and unfortunately on his birthday, that's the date that his mother's funeral was held, and he's been in our prayers over the course of this past week. But I do want to recognize his birthday, his 45th birthday. And as always, you may be number 88 on the seating chart, but you're number one in our hearts. Happy birthday to my seatmate.
Members, as announced, there's a caucus meeting and the wine caucus, and then there are the other receptions. So the chair would again ask those members that represent Forsyth County and the contiguous counties, Guilford County and the others, to please step to the speaker's office at this time. There'll be a very brief meeting. We won't keep you very long, but some information we want to bring you up to date on. Any further notices or announcements? If not, the gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn to reconvene Thursday, June 6th at 11 o'clock a.m. in the chamber at the State Capitol, subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Lewis moves, seconded by Representative Brisson. At the House, do now adjourn to reconvene Thursday, June 6th at 11 a.m. in the chamber of the State Capitol, subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. Stand adjourned.
Reading of a representative statement.
A representative statement honoring Dolly B. Burwell. Whereas Dolly B. Burwell was born in Vance County, North Carolina, where she attended the public schools before receiving an associate's degree from the former Durham College in Durham, North Carolina. And whereas Dolly B. Burwell was employed as legal secretary for law firm of Smith & Banks in Henderson, North Carolina, then worked as legal secretary for attorney John H. Banks, who later became district court judge. And whereas in 1988, Dolly B. Burwell was elected as a register of deeds for Warren County, becoming the first African-American woman to be elected at the office and serving in that position until 1996. And whereas Dolly B. Burwell was a community organizer activist over 40 years, she led a protest against PCB dumping in Warren County in 1978 and served as a member of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference as a board member of United Christian Church Commission for Racial Justice, and as a member of the officer of the Warren County NAACP and Warren County Political Action Committee. And whereas Dolly B. Burwell served as Director of Field Services for former Congresswoman Eva M. Clayton, District Director of former Congressman Frank W. Balance, and Director of Constituent Services for Congressman G.K. Butterfield. And whereas Dolly B. Burwell received many awards for her good deeds, including the Southern Christian Leadership Conference Women's Award for Outstanding Activism in Civil Rights, the NAACP National Trailblazer Award, the Rosa Parks Award for Outstanding Leadership and Activism for Racial Justice and Human Rights, and the Congressional Black Caucus Unsung Hero Award in Environmental Justice. Now, therefore, Darla B. Burwell deserves to be honored for the services she has rendered her community. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the journal on the 5th day of June 2019, submitted by Representative Terry Garrison, James White, Principal Clerk.